Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Blue Noise. This week is a very special one as we're joined by former Blues head of recruitment, Paul Montgomery. Hello Paul, welcome.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. Paul was the head of recruitment of Blues from 2008 to 2011, just after the relegation, and obviously contributed to some of Blues' best years, obviously in recent times, and obviously that Carling Cup win, which will live long in the memory. Firstly, we are going to start though at the right at the beginning of Paul's journey. Can you tell us what you used to do before, obviously, you went into football scouting and head of recruitment?
I was, for many years, my life was in the leisure industry and the music industry. But I had the passion for the football. I did my coaching badges. I went to, in the 70s, when the English game was not as good as what it was, I went and watched the Italians train. I went to Ajax, watched the great Cruyff, and I just always had this passion in football. And when I had a club in Glasgow, and when I was up in Glasgow, I would go to 6 or 7 games a week, and people used to think, "Why? What's he doing at the games?" You know, like Morris Johnson's sister worked for me behind the bar, and you know, that was my life. But my hidden passion was the football, and you know, I was. You know, we created the best nightclub in Europe at one stage when we were in Newcastle, which you may have heard of. It was the Tuxedo Princess, which is when we converted a ship into a floating nightclub. Any film star, pop star, football star, they all went there. You know, it was an awesome venue, you know, and that was my life. But my hidden passion was the soccer. And I then became a director of Hartlepool, who were then in the old fourth division. My role there was to try and sign some players and raise money. And even then, we got promoted. But at the time, I would go to several managers and say, you know, I've seen Perry Groves, I'd seen Morley, et cetera, players who were playing in the lower leagues. You should have a look at them, you know, and I knew what they would be thinking. We're thinking, well, what does he know about football? Yeah. All he knows is about nightclubs, women, et cetera, music, you know. Oh, yeah, no problem, Paul, no problem, thanks very much. And, you know, but then later, they would obviously find out, this guy obviously knew what he was talking about, because these players, Groves, and then went on to play for Arsenal, and Morley ended up at, I think it was West Ham and Man City. Paris, ended up at West Ham, etc., etc. So, but my kind of football world began with a chance meeting with a guy who I have a lot of time with, who was an ex-Blues manager, was Jim Smith. Mm. And Jim was a manager of Newcastle at the time. And we had dinner, we spoke football, and he obviously thought I knew what I was talking about. And he says, "I know you're busy, but would you fancy, you know, doing a little bit with me and working with me and find me some players?" I says, "Hey, not a problem." And I remember my first player was, I'd went to Czechoslovakia, and I saw a goalkeeper, and I came back and I said, and he said to me, Jim said, what did you think of the goalkeeper? I said, "Best shot stopper I'd seen, except his lines were good, did it." I went through the hall, and he says, "Okay." So he picked the phone up and he says to the chairman, "I want to take this goalkeeper." And I went, "Whoa, you haven't seen him play." And he went, "Listen, no, I trust your judgment." And obviously that player was Cernicek, who became a legend in Newcastle. But at the time, oh my God, his first training session, he let one through his hands, one through his legs. I was mortified. Jim walked by us, and, you know, them days, you know, the cigars. You weren't drinking when you saw him, were you? And I went home, and I was so mortified at home that for 5 days I never went out. And he rang me, and he says, "Why have you not been to the ground?" I says, "I'm distraught at the goal." He was, you know, like, he said, "Ah, don't worry about it. He can't speak English, you know. Don't worry about it." And then obviously late, you know, that was the man of him. You know, he was an awesome guy for me. You know, and then the player then became a legend at Newcastle. But then obviously when Jim went to Portsmouth, he asked me to help there. And then at Derby County, that's where I got my claim to fame, because I went to Derby County and we signed three Dutchmen that I brought in. And we got promoted first season. And that was when we went into Pride Park. And then we finished, I think it was our seventh or eighth. That was those days I'd brought in the likes of Rory Delap for 100,000, Chris Powell 100,000, Juan Chop 250, Daly 300 grand, Stimac, Zanovic free, Baiano free, Aranio free, you know. And we did awesome on little to zero budget, and I think that's what stuck with me as well, because I was known as somebody who could improve things on the field for limited budget.
Yeah.
And hence, Bobby Robson got the job at Newcastle, and I got a call from Jim Smith and said, "Oh, Bobby Robson wants to meet you at the training ground." And I said, "Oh, I only spoke to him last month. I was at a testimonial deal." I said, "What does he want to speak to me?" He said, "No, he wants you to go there and work with him." And I went, "Oh, do you not want me no more?" And he said, "No, listen." And this is the great man, Jim. He said, "Listen, we can't keep on going signing free transfers and staying 7th, 8th in the league. It's impossible. The money's getting bigger." And he says, "No, go and speak to him. Take it as an honour that he's asked for you. And go and see what he has to do. And that's where you're from, Newcastle. And that's your club." And I went up there. And then obviously, yeah, Bob and I got on great. I'd some great years with them, and we went on a project that went from the bottom of the Premier League to Champions League football. And I had some great times, you know, signing Janus's and Bellamy's and players like that. And I got a great free transfer, Olivia Bernard, played about 170 consecutive games before the poor guy developed arthritis. But there was a lot. It was a great time, and I had a great relationship with them, you know. I have some many stories which I'm writing about, which I had with them, but I'll not bore you with them. But such a great...
Read the book.
Yeah. And with young Gascoigne and stuff, you know, we had a lot of... Because he's from Newcastle, which, as you can gather, he was a regular in the clubs.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of stories together, but we had a great time. And from then, an actual fact... When we got to the Champions League, then I got a... Then Bob rang us, and he was very friendly with Glenn Roeder at the time, because Glenn had been a captain at Newcastle. And again, I was farmed off. Listen, we've done well. We've got the Champions League. He needs a hand at West Ham. Will you go and help him? And I went, "All right, okay, not a problem." But I was just like that. You know, I would help anybody who had a project who wanted to help with. And the idea at West Ham was to change the things around, because they had a limited skeleton squad. So I went to work on bringing five players in, and I already had Malouda and Barami lined up, because they were players I'd watched at Newcastle, who I was going to take them. And then that's obviously where I came across Drogba, and obviously where Didier wrote in his book that I was the man who inspired him. Well, I inspired him because I was going to sign. I think he got a shock, because when I knocked on his door and said, "Do you want to come to play in England?" He went, "Whoa, are you sure about that?" I said, yeah. And he had been a substitute for Gengon, you know. And but you could see he was awesome. And sadly, West Ham were bottom of the league in January when he was going to come. 400,000 he was going to cost. They'd only just paid 50,000 for him from Le Mans. And he was going to come in the January, but at the bottom of the league, he says, "Listen, I've just got into the French First Division. I didn't want to get relegated, you know what I mean? I said, I'm now just building up. I said, not a problem. He says, but I promise you, if you stay in the league, I will sign for you. But unfortunately, that was the year West Ham got relegated with the highest number of points because they had such a limited squad. I think they didn't have a striker for 7 months. They had to play a centre-half up front. And then from there, that's when I went to work with Alec. Oh, Rangers, and even there, signing all three transfers, and they became the first Scottish club who qualified for the last 16 of the Champions League. And then from there, I went back to Newcastle. They asked me to go there. They had one or two problems. And then, obviously, after that came the scenario when Alec went to Birmingham.
Yeah.
But I actually met Alec when I first started with James Smith, because we were going to sign Alec.
Okay.
As a centre-half when he was getting near the end of his day, but we kept losing goals in the last 5 minutes and we needed some experience at the back, and that was who we were going to sign. But the John Hall had just took the club over at Newcastle, and he put a block, said, oh, we don't want to sign any older players, etc. So that's how I met Alec, and obviously through time we used to speak a lot, and Alec, you know, he liked to be involved with the playing side, the recruitment side, and we got on. You know, it's a lot easier if you're batting the same wicket as what the manager is. And at the time when he got the job at Birmingham, they got relegated, and he called me and said, "Look, do you fancy the gig at Birmingham?" I said, "Yeah, I get you promoted." And he went, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah, as long as we, the way I see it, is having the spine experience and putting some legs around." And that's how we ended up, we did the Carsley and the Phillips. And to be honest, Mr. Sullivan, he was quite good at, if he fancied something, of backing, because they had a bit better wages than what normal championship players were getting.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, we built up, and that was the first season. And then had a bit of difficulty getting Boyer in, because we'd signed Boyer at Newcastle, and I arranged that Lee could be loaned with an option. And then obviously I remember when that was put to Mr. Sullivan, Alec come back and said, "Oh, Mr. Sullivan said Boyer's lost his legs. He's not as mobile as well." I said, "Well, I must be blind, because I just a couple of months ago watched him play for West Ham against Middlesbrough, and he's run about as youthful as what he did when, you know, he got from back to front as quick as what he did." And anyway, we got that over the line, and we put a side together, as you know, that we got promoted, and that was the aim, to get promoted. And then, obviously, once you're promoted, you start again. What have you got in the squad that can stay in the, that can play in the Premier League? And that's why the likes of Carsley and what we got, because even although they were older, they still had a year or so, you know, time to overlap on your way forward in the Premier League. And then we had, but I think you still had bits of situations with Mr. Sullivan at the time, because it's like, we had when Crystal Palace were in receivership. So I did a deal with the receiver at the time, which now is an unbelievable deal.
This one gets me every time.
This was an unbelievable. I did a deal for £1 million for Moses, Klein, and Zaha. No ifs, no buts, no maybes. The split was quite simple: 600 for Moses, 300 for Nathaniel, and 100 for Wilfred. He was a kid then, but yeah, he could have been anything. You know, Moses would have played. Klein would have been a great backup for Stephen Carr, who was an awesome signing that I forgot to mention there in the Championship run. And actually, with Stephen, we were quite lucky, because what happened with Stephen was the doctor at the time, we were talking, mentioned about Stephen, because we signed Stephen at Newcastle from Spurs. And I went, "Oh, he's retired now, he's injured." He said, "No, he retired, but he's not injured." Oh, I said, "I thought I said, are you sure? He said, oh, yeah, because he used to treat him. I said, well, ask him if he doesn't mind coming into, because if he's fit, to No Brainer. And then obviously, that's how what happened with Stephen. That was a real stroke of luck, but what a big stroke of luck, because he was awesome for Birmingham. Great professional, great player. And we went on, but getting back to the scenario with the Crystal Palace scenario was Moses, in my opinion, would have played.
Yep.
Klein would have been a backup for Carr, and Wilfred could have been anything, and which is what's happened.
Yeah,
because he is, at the moment, he is Palace.
Mm.
Without being disrespectful to the others, when he plays, they play.
Yeah.
So what a deal that was, but I pushed and I pushed, and I got the manager, and I says, I remember ringing out and said, what's happening with this thing? Because I'm getting pressure because Wigan and a couple of other clubs are coming in for thing. I've got this deal with thing. And anyway, the message I got from Mrs. Owen was, oh, we can't buy for the future.
Yeah.
And but how are we going to succeed? We can't buy for the future. And I had another, I had a French boy, Yatabari, who has been a steady player in the French First Division. He was a £90,000, €90,000, you know, for the fee that you have to pay when they're younger, et cetera, et cetera, because he'd been there for a few years. And I got an email from Mrs. Owen saying, no, he won't cost €90,000, he'll cost €3 million. And I went, €3 million? No, he's €90,000. His fee is €90,000 to the French FA. But he listed hotels, flights, wages, his mother's flights, and he built it up so the player was going to cost us €3 million, which really he didn't fancy it, so he kind of wanted to put a negativity on it, on the actual deal. But yeah, so we had quite a few scenarios like that. But then obviously when we got promoted, we now then looked at the next level, and the manager quite rightly decided, you know, the spine needed, he wanted it to be British.
Yeah.
You know, the central, because we what it's like. We would get inundated with faxes from agents, this centre half, that, this player, that player. But he wanted us to be British, UK. So we had a permutation of three. Roger Johnson, was it? Scott Dann and Mills.
Matt Mills.
Yeah. And those were the three. My two were Johnson and Dan's all day long. I think one of the coaches wanted Mills, but I managed to persuade. I mean, Roger Johnson was always
the first.
And then obviously the manager went with Scott Dann's, but we nearly lost him through Karen Brady. Almost lost Scott because she liked the. What would happen was the deal would be given to her and she would sign it off, for want of a better expression. So when we agreed the wages and stuff with the agent of Scott, when Karen sent the contract, she put a bit less.
Oh.
In the contract. So the agent ran me, what are you doing? We agreed. And I went, whoa, what? He said, he's going to Wolves. And I went, whoa, take it easy. I said, you know, I'll sort it. And obviously when I found that she had put a little bit less in, I thought, well, why did you do that? But never mind. So it ended up with them retracting what was done. Carol then got the thing, and we ended up paying double the money of what he originally wanted, because we had to go more than what Wolves were paying. Unbelievable. But anyway, we ended up with Scott, and it was worth it in the end, because we had great foundation, you know. That was an awesome thing. Then we signed Lee Boyer full time.
Yeah.
And then we then did the likes of, because the final year before that we unearthed the likes of young Faye from Ireland, who was a great servant to the club for a very small fee. And then, you know, we then kind of then moved forward for the next level. Benitez came in, and then who could have been anything.
Yeah,
but I think he done well overall on the and sadly what happened with him later in life, it was a, it was a terrible situation. But for us, he was, he was a handful. And then we moved forward on that, and then and even then, you still always got to be finding players. And I mean, I'm sure Alec will turn in his sleep when the thought of Seamus Coleman, who we had a deal for £50,000 with Sligo for him. He came on, not once, he came twice on trial as a backup for Stephen Carter.
Yeah.
And for some reason we declined on that, and then I resurrected another deal for Nathaniel Klein for £250,000, and that was not taken. So but that's life, that's football, you've got to get on with it. Everyone has an opinion.
Yeah.
Everybody has an opinion. My job was to find the players, the recruitment, find the deals. But if the club don't want to go through with it, there's nothing you can do. You don't take the huff with it. It's a man's game. Let's get on with it,
So how does this work? You've got, obviously, you're the head of recruitment. Alex McLeish is the manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the Sullivans, Golds and Karen Brady as the owners.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Do you like... You go and see the player, and then what happens from there?
Well, what would happen is, generally, Alec, you would know in your head what positions he would want to make better.
Mm.
So then you would go and find two or three choices. Because I believe the manager should have a seat. I mean, I know this day you have directors of football who make the signings and the coach coaches them players.
Yeah.
But I still believe the coach should have some say, you should be, what would you prefer?
Mm.
There's A, B and C.
It's going to cost him his job.
They're the best three.
Yeah.
Which one would you prefer?
Mm.
And I think that's the way it should be. But then obviously with the Chinese, when they came, that was different. We had to fax them.
Yeah.
We would put the player on paper, the deal, the wages, the agent's fee, the recommendation, and then I would get the manager to sign that he's agreed with this recommendation to sign. And then it would be sent to Hong Kong or wherever.
So that brings on to quite a fascinating one now, because the Moussa Dembélé deal.
Listen, Moussa Dembélé was nearly, that was so easy. It was an easy peasy deal. The guy wanted to come, his agent wanted him to come. He was £2 million, simple as that, from AZ. Player who I'd seen as a kid playing against Newcastle in the UEFA Cup. No brainer. Alec agreed 100% with that. 3 months. 3 months ahead, and I'm sure, and I don't know if this is right, but I got the impression that Carson Young was sitting there with his son playing fantasy football, and they hadn't heard of him. Do you understand what I'm saying? Must have thought, who's he? Dembélé, I've never heard of him. You know what I mean? And even Alec, I asked Alec to send an email to back me. And even Alec, I remember, it's clear as day, he wrote on his thing, we will get double figures.
Yeah.
Because that would have interested them, signing for two and selling in. That's what happened. Because we went so long that the agent said, listen, we can't wait any longer. He didn't want to go to Fulham.
Yeah.
He wanted us to come to Birmingham. And he was desperate to play for Birmingham because he saw what the project.
Yeah.
He saw what we were going to do, with how we were going to move forward. And sadly, it didn't happen. But that was the annoying part from the Chinese point, because I think they made a rod for their own back by coming in and saying, we've got this, we've got that to spend, we've got this.
Yeah.
And instead of just saying, right, we ain't have it a lot. And really, they got out of jail by recruitment that we made on a very low budget,
The story was that Alex has promised £50 million, was it, in as soon as they arrived?
Right. So therefore, but I wasn't silly. I recruited for two budgets.
Mm, yeah.
For a two balloons and a goldfish boat budget and a £50 million budget. And we ended up with the two balloons and a goldfish budget. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is just as well that we did that, because the £50 million was never there. let's be brutally truthful. We all, you know, it was a bit of a, it was a fantasy kind of scenario. It just wasn't there. But everything at the club was coming. Even Terry at the academy was bringing in, you know, young Redmond, great player.
Great player.
I mean, even when Alec brought him into the first team, you know, he was saying, I just want to take my time with him. I said, listen, if he's good enough, he's old enough. And I just, I love, you know, and Terry had signed Butland, and you know what I mean? You know, everything was getting better, shall we say. And it was all the next step, the next step. And I actually believe, without fear of contradiction, if they had done what they promised to do before we got to the Carling Cup final, we could have kicked on to top six place, no bet, because that following season I had a deal with them. I had arranged a dual kind of relationship with Hoffenheim.
Yes.
Where we were going to send young players to Hoffenheim and they were going to reciprocate that. So I, as part of that, I got a paper from them for first option for Sigurdsson for 7 million euros. I had CC, the Freiburg striker, who scored a lot of goals for Newcastle when he came. They were all lined up. They were the next thing. But what happened was, as you know, the sad thing was, I think the Giants thought, oh, well, we finished ninth in the league. You know, why do we need to spend lots of money? We were kind of mid-table when we were on the Carling Cup run. But we had a thin squad. And we kept emphasising, this needs strengthening, this needs strengthening. So apart from Dembele, we did, in the January, I did a deal with Spurs for Pavlyuchenko.
Yeah.
Which was a loan with an option to buy. So really, the option to buy is always in the favour of the buying club, because if he didn't perform for us, you don't take the option.
Yeah.
But that was haggled out. They were trying to work out the never-never on the transfer deal, which really was not relevant if he didn't perform for us. But the relevancy was, he could have been a big part of the squad. Scored, he goes. Then there was the player in Italy, Micheli, who would have been a great number 10. And assistant, you know, the manager liked him much. He was a good player. He reminded me, it was like going back to Derby, getting Baiano and Aranio. They were like 30 year old, but what you lack in a leg, you have in the intelligence. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, brilliant football brain. You know, like sadly with Kleb. You know, Alec was to me was a great set, but he didn't come fit. If you know what I mean, like fit enough, but still a, you know, if we had more time and got him fitter, well, you know, you can't. There's no substitute for talent.
Yeah,
you know, these are great players, and they would have. So what was emphasised to the Chinese owners at the time? We need, because if we get injuries, and Yaranak had come in on a free.
Yeah.
We were getting all low budget, and Yaranak was awesome in the final when he played in the final. And then we had Big Ziggy, who at first was used with the Spanish kind of game, and he was what he needed to grasp is someone of his height would scare defenders, and he didn't really grasp it at first, and the manager had to fine tune him into the English game. And you know, he was like he was a nice big guy. I remember in the final when we played Arsenal, you know, in the semi-final, you know, me, I'm a bit the mad Geordie passionate guy. You know, I was saying, you're terrifying them. You're terrifying. Yeah. I said, yeah. You know what I mean? Really? I said, yeah, go. You know, like, he was awesome in the final. And they did. They were the two central defenders in Arsenal were terrified of him. And you know, but it was just getting him to, because at one stage, you know, he was 6'5" and he jumped 5'1", you know, and you think, come on, you've got to be more. And it took a lot of patience and hard work by the manager and the coaching staff, you know, to get him there. But, you know, he did well. But the moral of the story is, when we were getting to the Carling Cup, if we had injuries, what was defined to the Giants, we were in trouble.
Mm.
And then obviously that's exactly what happened. We had the spine all injured, and we just went on that day. And even, and then obviously my story sadly ended because we played a lot, and but I was working on the next season. Yeah. And that's when I had the Sigurdsson and the ZZ and the army all lined up. And then obviously we played Spurs last game of the season. Sad to talk about it. And the man who scores the goal, Pavlyuchenko. So me being me, I sent an email. I hope you're proud of yourself. The man who scored put us down, should have been in a blue shirt. Oh, you sacked. I went, no problem. No, you know, it was a bit pathetic really, but I was, just the way I was. I was a very passionate guy. And I was distraught with the work, and I had the vision of the next hurdle, you know?
Yeah.
And then, weird enough, 2 weeks later, the pan of rang me and says, oh, listen, I'm sorry about before, he says, I think you're better off working for me, finding the players, and I says, no thanks. I work for the club. I've always wanted to be with a club. I'm a club man, not a chairman's man.
So going back to, obviously, I mean, Carson Young years were ended horrendously. But going back to that, you've got yourself and Alex sorted out kind of players and transfers that you want to sign.
Yes.
How many meetings did you have with Carson Young? How often was he over here, and how often did you two discuss this with him in person?
I saw Carson Young once at the Christmas party. At the award winning, he
game
came to
season.
One, yes,
yeah.
And that was it. Everything was dealt through Panu or by fax for the players that you wanted to bring in. So he took limited to zero. I don't know what stance he took of being in Hong Kong with Panu or whatever, but for me, he did. We never saw him.
That's bizarre when you think about it, a football club. I mean, nowadays.
And that was the frustrating part, because we were faxing him, but and wondering, well, what are we doing here? It's much easier if he was here and we could see a signed Dembele, sign Pablo on loan, because this is why, you know, then write it on a piece of paper and have to send emails to say, please, you know, give us this player. We need this, otherwise we're in trouble. And sadly, that's what nobody foresaw what was going to happen after the Carling Cup. That Z wouldn't play again, and centre halves were injured. The spine was all taken out the team through injury, and nobody. We all made them aware of a possibility, but we were so unlucky for this to happen, and it, obviously it did happen, and which emphasised the non-signing of requested players more frustrating, and really a bit angry, you know, for when you've worked hard on a project, and the project was to make Birmingham, you know, a great team, and we were getting there. In my opinion, we were getting there. No ifs, buts, or maybe. We were getting there. And we just needed that, but we just had the wrong owners, I think.
Did Carson Young, I think it's been touched on before, did Carson Young ever, I think owners nowadays, we always kind of say, especially like owners from overseas, that they're almost signing the players themselves and making those choices. Did you ever feel like, because obviously Carson Young was, you know, rejecting Dembele, rejecting those options, that he almost wanted to control himself, sign the players that he wanted, that he knew about?
Yeah, well, I used to laugh with Arlo and just say, no point in sending a name that they've never heard of, because we ain't got any chance of signing them, because it's as though they were playing fantasy football. You know what I mean? If you sent them out with a name that they knew, oh yeah, I know him. You know, it was like you had a different kind of attitude to what you had with someone who they wouldn't know. And sorry to mention it again, but the likes of Dembele, they wouldn't have known. They wouldn't have known him from Adam, because he didn't have that big name that they would have, which would have pricked their mind to say, oh yeah, we'll take him. It was like, fob off, you know what I mean? We were getting fob. 3 months went on, you know, 3 months of, oh, come on, we're going to lose that, and we lost it, rest history. Now, and then Moussa obviously went to Fulham, and then Spurs paid 15 million for him, and, you know, and like, things like that, and like the likes of Klein, who was put in again, you know, ended up at Liverpool for 18, 20 million for 250 grand, you know, as a backup to Carr. These were all players that would have been a no-brainer to take, and had the system been whereby the head of recruitment or the sport director or the manager had that authority to say, yeah, sign, rather than put to them to get a rubber stamp, then they would have all, well, I'm imagining they all would have been in a blue shirt, and I don't think we would be having this conversation. We, God knows where we could have been, you know, and I'm being deadly serious, because every year was an improvement, in my opinion. You know, obviously there was some, there was a couple of, I mean, Bent was a poor signing in the championship run.
Yeah.
He didn't perform the way he should have done, and then other people weren't happy with Michel, but I think that was a bit unlucky for him, because he played in a position where we had a great player, Barry Ferguson. We had a leader, you know, we had a, who was a great midfield player, and he played the similar role. So was Michel a failure at Birmingham? I don't think that. I just think he was in a, he played a position whereby the chap ahead of him was better. But he would have been a good backup had Barry been injured, because Barry was an awesome signing, which obviously, which was inherited through Alec and his relationship with the Rangers. And I know Barry didn't do so well at Blackburn, but every man's got his club. But with Birmingham, he was tremendous, as was most of the squad, you know. So
part of your role also, and this is a role that, I mean, I suppose fans don't get to see, the dealing with the agents, scouting the player, obviously then dealing with the agents. Can you just explain some of your experiences dealing with agents and kind of negotiating contracts and transfer fees?
Well, it's like, I mean, there was a stage whereby you just used to get inundated with faxes. And there always, and I've had so many where I was looking for a left back, and then you went through the whole thing, and when you went to see him, he was a right back. And you would say, by the way, the guy that you said, he's not a right. So you then learn, when you're doing my, not to accept everything. So you like everything. You learn who is reliable and who is unreliable. Like every form of work, every form of life. So therefore, in my, you would learn to respect on some agents who you could trust, where they were genuinely looking to get you a better player, as opposed to them doing a deal, whereby you have other agents who were just money orientated, who weren't interested in the player, do you know what I mean, who were just interested in doing a deal. And you kind of have that kind of, in time, learn who you can kind of trust and who you can't, because an honest fact, you would get hundreds of facts per week, and some of them were like, not even, wouldn't got a game for me pub team, you know, some of the players that they would have, you know. And then, I mean, we had incident whereby Mr. Sullivan got us to sign a central defender called Espinosa. I remember Alec saying to me, Mr. Sullivan wants us to sign. I said, well, we don't need him. And he said, yeah, but his backup. And I said to him, well, I give him my best adjectives to describe what I thought about the player. He never played at all. Yeah. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So that was an agent putting in a player who said he was the best, and we kind of got overridden by that, you know what I mean, by the owner who brought that player in. But you just have to get on, just, you prove right in the long term, you know. It's all about opinion, but like Bobby Robson used to say to me, there's 50,000 people there every Saturday have got an opinion, and everybody's got an opinion about football, blah, blah, blah. He said, but I'm the manager, It's whose opinion I accept that comes. But and so I want you to see every player that comes in front of me. Mm. You know, so football is about opinion. And hopefully, from my point of view, I always wanted, it was just a passion and a desire that I wanted to be the best at what I did, you know. And so, and I think my 40 at the time was putting teams together on zero to limited budgets.
Yeah.
And I think I did well at that, you know, to be honest. And compared to nowadays, when the multi-millions that are wasted on, in my opinion, some ordinary players, without in some players who really are not the level of that team who's signing the player, you know.
Mm.
And I think that's the other part of the equation for someone in my. It's not just about sourcing a player and monitoring a player and finding a player. It's about also having the judgment on what level that player can play and what job he can do for the manager. You know, this is what this guy can do. And so he knows everything about this player before he comes in to say, right, he's not the best at this, he's not the best at that, but he will do this, he will do that all day long. And I think, and that's where getting back to my original conversation, where I believe a manager should always be involved.
Mm.
Always be involved with the recruiting side.
Well, as you said about Espinosa, it was clear yourself and Alex weren't involved in that one.
No.
Is that something, because we've seen that at West Ham in recent years, is that something the Golds and the Sullivans did quite a lot with players? Just kind of
I get that impression, yeah. In my short time, there was two or three they tried to put onto us, but we didn't kind of take them. I think there was a couple of others in the past who weren't the best, for want of a better expression, who didn't come up to the level what they should have had. But you know, what can you say? If the, you know, the owner pays the wages, he pays the money, it's his club.
Mm.
If you know what I mean, it's like what can you say? You can only give your opinion, and if your opinion, and then if you're good at what you do, your opinion will always end up coming right in the long term, you know, rather than be wrong. So, yeah, it does happen. It does happen.
Before we move on to a few final questions, just quickly touching on, because the Zaha one gets me every time. Just quickly going back to that, you said it was 100 grand that he'd have been kind of cost of the three.
Mm-hmm.
How much, I mean, you'd be about 16 at the time?
Yeah, 16, 17, yeah. But he was just starting, he was playing the reserve, you know. I mean, when you're doing my job, you're not just knowledgeable about senior players.
Yeah.
You're knowledgeable, you've got people who work for you. You know, I had a great scouting team, experienced guys, different parts of the country. And I knew everything that was going on. Well, I believe I did. I think I was in advance of everybody else because of having a good team that supported you. And you know everything about young players that are coming through. You know, and we knew about Wilfred.
So if Zaha costs £100,000 and he's 16, 17, how much does a player like cost in terms of wages? It seems quite a low risk deal, doesn't it?
Yeah, but and then he would have been on pardon me, French, he would have been on buttons.
Mm.
And the Crystal Palace were in insolvency, they were bust.
Mm.
So the receiver was doing his best for Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And Wilfred wasn't a player then. So for him to be 100,000, and Nathaniel, I'm sure it was 6, 3, and 1. That was how the.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Wigan paid in the end for Moses. I think they paid about 650,000 after we couldn't do the deal. Mm. But that was how it was broke up. You know, now you would think, how can you get Wilfred Zaha for 100,000? But he wasn't an established player.
Yeah.
What it was a chance, and it was a chance because of the size of the deal.
Mm.
You know, you were taking a chance. He could have been anything. You know, we may not be sitting here today and think Wilfred was such a awesome player like he is.
Mm.
You know, he may have went the other way. But that was a chance that you take, and that's the beauty of your knowledge and expertise in thinking that this kid's got a chance, you know, a big chance.
Going back now, just two final ones for me, quick questions. Who was the best Blue sign you made? He's speechless.
Best for what? Just for the club?
Best in terms of deal, club, everything.
I think Dan's.
Scott Dan.
Mm-hmm. Good team player, good attitude, great young professional, £1 million, okay wages, and just a stalwart about with Roger. Mm. I just thought they were the rock that we built upon, you know. So there was other exciting players, but I just think value for money.
Yeah.
I think he was one of the better ones.
And finally, the worst player you've signed, or the player you obviously didn't turn out to what you thought he'd be.
Bent.
Marcus Bent.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was. I spent many sleepless nights, but I wasn't the only one. Roy Aiken liked him as well. I just wanted to palm that one off. Right, Roy really thought the same as me, because I mean, you know, at the time we had a great team at the time. You know, yeah. I thought Roy was a super guy. You know, working and Andy Watson. You know, we had a great team, and Roy liked him as well. So I just thought Ben was going to be a really good signing for us, for what, because he'd done ever so well at Wigan, etc. And he just came to us and just wasn't. He was like an imposter. Do you know what I mean? Is that his brother was saying? No, he just wasn't what you expected. And sorry to, you know, but for me, you know, some people get one right in my job. Me, if I got one wrong, I'm distraught.
Yeah,
you know, it's just the way I am. It's a passion. It's the inside. I never want to be wrong. And Marcus, good lad, you know, but he just didn't perform for us. So I think, out of all the signings, I think, sorry, Marcus, but he did the poorest for us, shall we say? Yes.
I mean, we've ticked off everything Blues now, but there is a book coming out next year, isn't it?
Yes, yes. The Player Finder.
The Player Finder.
Yeah.
Paul's bringing a book out, so obviously it'll be very interesting reading for Blues fans, Newcastle fans, Derby fans.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there'll be a lot more stories, and I'm sure he'll use a lot more adjectives.
Yeah. A bit more expletives.
Yeah, more expletives.
Yeah.
But thanks for coming on the podcast today. It's been brilliant.
Not a problem.
Great to have your insight on, obviously, the glory years of Blues in recent years. And thanks for listening.
I would just like to say before, it was an honour to be involved with Birmingham, and from all the clubs, my best time and my best period in football was when I spent in Birmingham. You know, it was awesome support. You know, both all the teams in Birmingham have awesome support. You know, they're very passionate, just like the Geordie people. So I really I spent a marvellous time, and I'm still, although I'm annoyed at what could have been, I'm still very honoured to have been part of in this city, you know.
Perfectly put. Thanks for listening, guys.